Well, this is a wonderful day. This is Thursday, July 19th, 2018. Goodness. And this is the World Peace Diet Circle call, the third Thursday of every month, and we are 1 hour earlier. So those of you who are on the call, good for you. You were able to make the adjustment. This is a trial that we're doing. I'm not totally sure we'll stick to this time. It really is up to the group. If you like this better, there was a few people that specifically requested it, East Coast people who thought that it really is kind of late when we start at 9 o'clock and go until 10:30. So we decided to do an experiment and start a little bit earlier, 1 hour earlier, 5 o'clock from now on, Pacific time, and 8 o'clock Eastern time. However, if you do not like it, let me know. And if we get a few people who really don't like it, then maybe we can, I don't know what we'll do a survey or something and go back. But I think this may be great. For me, it's really fine either way. Most of the time, we're in California, and either 5 or 6 is fine. When we're traveling, we don't know what's best. But anyway, I'm glad you're with us, and it's a lot happening. There's a lot happening in the world, as you all know. And besides that, in the world of the vegan transformation or the awakening of people to the enormous consequences of animal agriculture and the building of an alternative, as we talk about a lot in the World Peace Diet movement, that there's just in a sense, two approaches one can take. One is to fight against the system that's obsolete and try to tear it down. Another is to build an alternative and just focus on building that alternative and focusing on creating something beautiful and functional and delicious and that's working well. And because animal agriculture absolutely does not work well for the earth or for animals or for us as people. Although, as you all know, you could say it works very well for those in positions of power. So, or who get rich from the whole thing. In any event, it's great to have you all with us, and we'll go ahead and get started with the call. I think, as you all know, we're going to be blessed with the presence of Anna Ferguson today, and she'll be with us at the beginning part of the call, and she's the author of a new, relatively new book. I mean, it's a new book. It's, A While Being Born, which is pretty common in doing books. It's a whole process. World Peace Yoga. She's a really well-known yoga teacher and trainer and a longtime vegan and World Peace facilitator also. So before we go into inviting Anna to come on the call with us, let's go ahead and take the time that we like to take in the beginning of our call to just relax for a moment and focus on the presence that we feel and the connection that we feel with each other and with the source of this movement, which is loving kindness, harmony, peace, freedom, joy, beauty, abundance, awareness, kindness, compassion, respect, and the radiant, eternal truth of our own original nature, our true nature. What we are essentially is consciousness. We are all expressions of consciousness, animals, humans. We're on a beautiful planet. So we give thanks for all of the people who are working to help understand this more deeply within themselves and to live this truth that we are, that we're each on a journey of exploration and discovery and awakening that is unique to us. We give thanks for our own lives and for everything that's happened in our lives to help bring us to this point of our unfoldment, to understand at a deeper level our interconnectedness with all expressions of life. And we give thanks to all those who have gone before us and who are coming after us and who are with us here today, all the humans who are working hard to bring a world of peace and freedom for everyone through writing and through teaching and through speaking and acting and meditating and questioning the official narratives in our society, publicly and privately, as these narratives get embedded into our own thought patterns. And we give thanks for all the teachings of all the traditions that question narratives of violence and exclusion. And we give thanks also for all the teachers in our lives and for the spirit of truth living within ourselves. May we all be loyal to that spirit of truth within ourselves, dedicate ourselves to understanding and making an effort to follow wherever the journey leads us in understanding our true nature. We give thanks knowing that we're part of an awakening on this beautiful planet of human consciousness so that we can actually celebrate and live our lives here in a creative, abundant way that is absolutely possible. There's really nothing stopping us. We give thanks we're part of this awakening and that we can every day contribute a little bit more in our own unique way. And so it is. Much love to you all. Bless you. And again, thanks for taking time out of what I know are very busy schedules to be on the call. And it's always good to know that if you, for some reason, missed the call, it is recorded and you can listen later. You can get online. And if you can get the link, secret link, which is not secret, but it's posted also, of course, on the World Peace Diet Facilitators Facebook group page every week. And it's also posted on all the emails that go out from me about the World Peace Diet Circle. Okay, so here we are. And as we all know, hopefully, some of you perhaps are new, which is great. We always have people coming through the World Peace Diet training program, which is an online program. And so there's new people on the call. There's also old people, new and old, and everything in between, even though none of us are new or old, of course. And so welcome to the new people. And as we all know, if you would like to make a comment or ask a question, this is really your time for the next hour or so, hour and maybe a little longer, hour and a half. Press star 6. Just press star 6 on your phone or whatever you're listening on. And that will effectively, I think, hopefully anyway, raise your hand here and I can unmute your phone. Your phones are all muted automatically. Okay, so now I'm going to introduce Anna Ferguson. And Anna is a longtime friend of the World Peace Diet and of me, of Madeline and I. And she's actually one of the original attendees of the very first World Peace Diet facilitator training that we ever held. Back in, I don't know when it was, 2007 maybe, in Michigan. We had a big camp out. A lot of people camped out in tents. It's beautiful land in Michigan, and some people stayed in local hotels. We had a big crowd. I think it was 40 or 50 people. And it was 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and quite a nice crop of empty side facilitators. And I don't know how many we have now, but it's quite a few. I think we're probably up to maybe 300 or 400 something like that. And but these were the first ones, and Anna was part of that. She was there. She drove up from Cincinnati, and she and her colleague, some of you have heard him speaking on these calls quite often over the years, Mark Stroud, were one of the first ones to present World Peace Diet study groups in anywhere, and they did it at Cincinnati. And they went on to create a wonderful yearly festival, Jubilee, the World Peace Jubilee. And it was every year. It was usually in October. And we went every year for 5 years, Ellen and I, and spoke and also put on World Peace Diet facilitator trainings every year at those events. And, again, quite a few people went through our training the World Peace Jubilee in Cincinnati in the autumn, including Kip Anderson, who's one of our illustrious alumni and creator of Conspiracy, What the Health, and other films, and many other people. Ari Nessel is one who's founder of Pollination Project, which every day gives $1,000 to usually vegan activists who are working to help bring this message. Been doing this now for, I don't know, 4 years, I think. Ari and lots of other people. So Anna has been a great advocate for veganism for years. She's a yoga teacher. Plus, she also has a yoga teacher training that she conducts. And the World Peace Diet is one of the texts for her training. And I've been able to be part of her trainings over the years sometimes. And she's also now the author of a book, which some of you, probably most of you, are aware of, called World Peace Yoga, which we'll find out more about in a few minutes. And so there's quite a vegan community in Cincinnati that Anna is really a very crucial part of over the years. And it's really helping so many people and animals and our ecosystem. So I'm really honored to welcome Anna Ferguson to the call here. So Anna, I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone and then we can have a conversation. So hopefully this is going to be working here. Sometimes I never know.
I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, good. It works. All right.
Thank you for that introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to have you with us again. It's been a while.
And, it has.
Tell us, it was wonderful to see you not too long ago in San Francisco. You flew out with your family and spoke at the Cowspiracy What the Health conference that was held in San Francisco. I think it was about a month ago or so. And that was, part of your role now as an author of a book which promotes veganism. So, it's just great to have you with us. And let me just ask you a quick question. So now that you're a couple things have happened, big changes in your life, one of them is, of course, being an author. Another one is co-founding a vegan school. How is all this affecting you, and how's it all going? I'd just love to hear more about it.
Oh, well, things are going great. There's always a lot on our plate, but there's also always more people getting involved and more people becoming vegan. So it just keeps us inspired to keep doing the work. And certainly having this book complete feels like a great, it's now out, but also it also feels like even more work to do to just get the message out. And when we were first introduced to the World Peace Diet, it was like, I had been vegan for several years, but it was like just a complete re-inspiration to read your book, which we originally found out about your book from Elizabeth Farians, who you had given a manuscript to. And
right.
Mark and I read the book and were just so inspired that we ultimately ended up changing the name of our yoga studio to World Peace Yoga, which I think people know that story. It's really great to have the book now complete and just another tool to inspire vegans and also inspire yogis to become vegan.
Right. Yeah, I know that's one of the things everybody probably is, a lot of people sort of assume that if people are serious anyway, yoga practitioners, they're probably vegans. And yet I think a lot of them probably are not. But I guess most of them are vegetarians. Would you say most of them are vegetarians? Most yoga?
At this point, I think the latest statistic that Mark and I saw, that there's like something like 36 million people practicing yoga in the U.S. now. And
wow.
I think it's like something like less than 10% that actually are vegetarian. So the potential, and
wow,
then even a smaller percentage of that is vegan.
So the potential we have for
reaching people with this book, especially since we've included some great art and a lot of different aspects of it that make it
fun while also introducing a vegan lifestyle, there's just such a great potential for more people to get on board. But
also what I was going to share too is that for people that are already vegan and have like read the World Peace Diet and read other books and are like totally dedicated to the vegan lifestyle but are just having a challenge dealing with sometimes the heaviness of learning this information and the sometimes depression that might even come along with it, or just maybe even sometimes hopelessness, that this book also offers, I feel, for people that are vegan, some practices, meditation practices, breathing practices, movement practices for staying uplifted even with the heaviness that that comes with being more aware.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's really, I think, very helpful and important, because a lot of people, it's the information of what happens to animals on a regular basis on such a massive scale is just, in a sense, it's soul-crushingly terrible. I mean, just to think that so many animals are imprisoned in such brutal conditions, and we human beings just keep doing it. We don't stop, and nothing seems to be able to get people to care enough to stop supporting it. And I think that can create in sensitive people, because I think usually people who are drawn to yoga are somewhat more progressive and more sensitive. It can make them just either not want to go vegan in the first place, or they don't want to hear about it, or if they do, it can make them very, at a deep level, I think, very unhappy and carry a lot of stress inside. And I heard a story from a woman just recently. She was a long-time yoga practitioner, and she just, even though she was practicing yoga, she went vegan, but she felt more and more anger and in a sense almost hatred for human beings in general, because she had the experience that a lot of us have of trying to share these ideas with other people and having them just be in denial and refuse to change or even want to hear about it. And she said she went to a yoga class with a different teacher who, instead of sort of doing yoga as it's very often done, which is more like, I think Mark calls it, and maybe you call it, Indian gymnastics, you know, just sort of a more gymnastic type of approach. But she went to a different teacher who really spent quite a bit of time doing meditations to connect with, you know, inner love and inner peace and inner joy. And it just brought up so much stuff for her, you know, because she didn't feel anything. She didn't feel any inner peace or inner joy or inner love. because she was a new vegan and she just felt a lot of hatred and anger for all the human beings that were causing all this misery to these poor animals and who wouldn't change. And it ultimately led her on a journey of healing because she broke down and started just sobbing because of, you know, what she felt when she got home. And I think what you're talking about with your book is providing context for people maybe like her who are doing yoga, who learn about this and need something maybe within the yoga, you know, sort of context, like meditations and examples of people that will help them get to a stage where they can at least feel joyful that they're not eating animals and that there is progress being made, you know, that kind of idea.
Right. Yeah, and that, of course, was also related to my talk at the What the Health Cowspiracy Conference, which was self-care and sustainability for activists, and that if we're going to be out there and share veganism and share what a peaceful world looks like and share all the vision of our future, we can't be angry and stressed and burnout. We have to have tools for staying uplifted and really living what we want the vision of our future to be. And so having, whether it's a meditation practice or a conscious breathing practice or eating more mindfully, not just the food that we eat, but just eating more mindfully in general, not when we're driving a car or things like that, but really taking in all these different aspects that are part of a yoga practice and making time for self-care so that ultimately we can be a better service to the world.
Right, yeah.
And that's a big focus of the book, too, is just being of service and to the world.
Right. Great, yeah. I'm hoping everybody on our call gets a copy of your book. Do you know if it is now actually, is it now actually available? I mean, can we actually buy it on Amazon and get it and read it and have it?
Right now, it's available through our website, worldpeaceyogabook.com. The printed version is available. Digital version is coming soon.
Uh-huh.
And it is available. And one great thing, which I really appreciated at the conference that we were just at in June, is that I know that a lot of fellow vegans that do practice yoga sometimes feel a little bit like, I don't know the word, maybe sad that their yoga teacher is not a vegan. Like, I really
All
love
right.
them, but they're yeah. not a vegan. And so I said, get a book for your teacher that's not a vegan yet, because this is a great way to introduce them to veganism in a joyful way, but also in a way that like is very real so they can understand how it relates to yoga. And in my book, I relate the veganism to yoga, not just from the aspect of ahimsa, nonviolence, which is kind of a no-brainer, but also in relationship to our, to the energetic body and the chakras, in relationship to meditation, in relationship to all these different aspects of yoga and how vegan is connected to that. So essentially, if you are a vegan, you are practicing yoga, in my opinion.
Just by
being vegan. And, of course, there's so many practices within the realm of yoga that you can do for self-care, but definitely getting these books out to our yoga teachers that are not vegan yet as a way to inspire them is really great thing to do too.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. So anyone who's practicing veganism as a practice, which is really the definition of veganism, is to minimize the suffering we're causing others, both animals and humans, but that's really the first limb, right? I mean, it's practicing ahimsa, which is the foundation of yoga. A lot of people think yoga is simply, you know, hatha yoga postures, but it's a much bigger system, which has to do with bringing us back home to our true nature and awakening out of the delusion of fear and separation. And so maybe can you do you want to say maybe for everyone, do you have a brief example or something like that of something that people could do just to, that would maybe be helpful to them for self-care if they're vegans and getting stressed about the world situation and so forth?
Well, initially, I think to keep things simple to start, it could be just every day before you wake up and do anything to just sit in silence for 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's simple, it's practical. The whole idea is to come into a daily routine, like kind of like brushing your teeth in the morning and before bed, that you have this thing that you do every day, no matter what. Like, we eat 2 or 3 times a day. We brush our teeth every day. And so start just by sitting in silence for 1 minute every day. Breathe deep and just be aware, conscious of your breath, and maybe just practice being grateful for something. So just sit for a minute, be grateful for something. And maybe as time goes on, sitting for a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more.
Right.
But that would be one thing. And, of course, getting to a class where you're with other people to support you in that is also wonderful. But that's also one of the reasons why I wrote my book, too, is so that people don't have to rely on getting to a studio or getting to a class, that they have this, okay, here's this guided meditation or here's these different things that I can do. And
right,
yoga,
yeah.
And yoga is really all about, I mean, you said it, like, in terms of letting go of this idea of separation and disconnection and coming to the realization that of the interconnectedness of all of life. That's really the definition. That's really not the definition, but the goal of yoga, to realize the interconnectedness of all of life and that we're part of that. And so it's a huge disconnect that yogis are not vegan, because that's the essence of yoga, is to realize our interconnectedness. And if we realize our interconnectedness, then it's impossible to harm another, because that harming that other would be harming us. And that's like the whole essence of yoga, which is, I feel, the essence of veganism, as you explained.
Right. Yeah, they just go right back into the same root, don't they? Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So have you thought of doing any videos at all on this? And when you're talking about this, I just have this feeling of maybe some videos would be good, too, because you know how everybody's wanting to watch videos. I don't do that many myself, but I probably should do more. But it's nice to hear, you've written this book, and it might be nice to have some videos that maybe go along with it some way.
You know, we are actually getting ready in the next month or so to do a Kickstarter campaign for a second printing of my book, which part of that will be creating the digital version, but also an audio version, so that the pictures in the book, that there's audio to listen to do with the sequences and guided meditations. And then there will also be some videos, too, but it'll mainly be audio to go with the images that are in the book. So that is definitely in the works.
Right.
Yeah.
Busy. Yeah, lots to do. And do you want to say anything? I just think it's interesting, the efforts that you guys have been making to have a vegan school, because there's not that many vegan, you know, strictly vegan schools in the United States, or I don't even know, worldwide either, that are based on that philosophy and sort of have that ideal. And children are taught kindness to animals and not eating them. And we went to a vegan school. I remember when we were in India, it was actually a private school that was run by some German people, but it was a vegan school with mostly Indian students. And it was really delightful to just be in a place where there was this whole vibe of teaching children to be kind and caring to animals. And they even had some rabbits, I think it was, and a few chickens and a few animals there that were, were really taken care of very well, and the kids had to, take care of them. And, is your thing progressing? Is that really difficult? Do you have any problems with local authorities, or is it something really doable, do you think, in Cincinnati?
Yes, I think it's absolutely doable. We had our we finished our first year last year. We ended school in May, and this summer we're doing, tomorrow is the last day of our summer camp, which was all vegan, and the kids learn yoga, mindfulness, and work with Montessori method materials, as well as have a lot of outdoor time in nature. And the kids devour the food. They love being outside. They love connecting with each other. And also the really amazing thing is that in this particular camp, only about 20% of the kids participating are actually vegan. And so, but parents are really interested in their kids eating healthy food and being exposed to these different things. And so it's really amazing to have this diverse group of people and to obviously cater to the vegans that really deeply appreciate, and it's for them like a need that we have to fill. But also that there's a lot of interest just with, because, I mean, schools are just notorious for having terrible food, vegan or not. For a child to be able to come to school and eat a healthy plant-based meal, parents are really all about that. And we have a registered dietitian on our staff that reviews our menu and is able to assure parents that they are getting everything that is necessary for them to receive in order to have energy and go through the day. And we start our next school year in September, and we've got more students enrolled, and we just continue to expand. And actually, the Kickstarter that we're doing for the second printing of my book will also benefit the school's expansion.
I see.
So we are working on expanding the school. We've got a new location that is much larger for this school year that we are renting until we find our permanent home, which will ideally be on some acreage of land.
Right. Wow, great. Yeah. Did you have, I'm just guessing, around a dozen or so people at summer camp this summer?
Yes. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
around 12 kids and maybe three were
vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, kids really, I think if we could just be better role models for our kids, they would so appreciate it. It's such a tragedy in my mind that kids get so abused by a culture that has so much structural violence, just the way kids are born, the way they're forced into these authoritarian systems, and their natural curiosity in many ways is just slammed, and they're taught that they have to listen to other people and regurgitate information and eat the bodies and secretions of horribly abused animals. I mean, what all that does to beautiful beings is, I don't think we have any concept really of how devastating that is. So, of course, anything we can do to help heal that is absolutely so vital and so important. And I think also it's a way to help educate the parents too. If they're willing to have their kids go to a school like this, they have to already be moving in that direction. But do you find that you have some interest in the actual school? Not just a summer camp from non-vegan parents, that they'd be willing to have their kids actually go to a vegan school?
We had, in our first year, we had two kids that were not vegan that attended the school.
Uh-huh.
So we absolutely believe that there will be a combination, and I don't think the school, I think if we only relied on vegans, the school wouldn't make it, but we know that we have, that people are going to be interested in
right.
school for the Montessori method and for healthy food, you know, in general. And one thing that is unique about the school in terms of we're not just a Montessori school serving a plant-based meal. You know, that's not really what makes the school vegan. I mean, it does in a sense, but really what is unique about what we're doing is that we're integrating learning, empathy, and compassion into the core academics. So it's not just, oh, they get this plant-based meal and that's like their only exposure to plant-based veganism. It's actually learning empathy and compassion in connection to all their other activities and being really aware of the language that we are using so that we're not indoctrinating them with certain words or phrases or like the books that we use and everything really looked at and how we can integrate empathy and compassion into the school and not indoctrinate kids with, for example, in most schools you would see a book of a traditional farm with farm animals and things like that. And so we make an effort to have books that are not showing farm animals, but just showing animals, like not farm animals, just animals. so they don't aren't brought up to think, oh, this is the animal for eggs, this is the animal for milk, this is the animal for whatever.
Right, for meat. This is the animal for meat. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so we're... So, yeah, that is really integrating the empathy and compassion component into everything. Even outdoor time, if a child were to, like, pick up a bug or insect and be disruptive to it, to, like, educate on that and why we don't want to be disruptive to them. And so all of that, yeah.
Great. I want to just say and remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question of Anna or make a comment about this subject, we're kind of getting, I think, toward the end of our conversation here for this particular call, but just press *6 if you would like to say something to Anna and to me, to us, about this whole idea of, well, really, there's two different things going on, but they're very much linked, obviously, through veganism, this education of children, and then yoga as a practice of cultural, spiritual, individual, emotional healing and awakening, and how veganism, you know, essentially fits in at a core level to a healthy version of both of these. But I have to say, I think it's so inspiring to me that you and the people you're working with in Cincinnati for the last really quite a few years keep persistently planting seeds that spread the vegan message more and more deeply throughout the Midwest, you know, through Cincinnati and Ohio. And I mean, we're not talking about doing all this in California or somewhere where there's more people. I mean, you're doing it in what used to be called Porkopolis, I remember, in Cincinnati. And I think it's just very inspiring to see the efforts gradually bearing fruit. And I remember early on, you and Mark would do World Peace Society facilitator, study groups, and, you know, kind of built up a vegan community gradually through Cincinnati. And it's been great for Madeline and I to go to Cincinnati to the yoga studio and to see all these people that are bringing it in so many different ways into the city. Is there any more news, any more sort of just any updates on anything else? Like, I know we were hearing sometimes a possibility of a vegan restaurant and also a vegan, well, the World Peace Recipe book, the some of those other things. Is there any more news on those fronts as well?
Yes, we are working with the city on getting our building permits for the vegan restaurant. We're putting an expansion on our building, and that is in process. So we'll be breaking ground as soon as we
Great.
Get the city's approval. And the cookbook is coming along and something that's being focused on now that we've finished the yoga book. And, I don't have an update on timeline for either of those things yet, but they are moving along. It's all happening. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. That's really wonderful to just keep tabs on what you guys are doing. So we're looking forward. I think you were saying there's also probably going to be kind of a formal launch of your new book, The World Peace Yoga Book, maybe in next spring in Cincinnati?
Yeah, so we're planning a book launch party / Veg Fest, and that'll be on May 18th, and we're really looking forward to having you be part of that and to celebrate the book coming out, celebrate veganism, and it'll be
great.
A free event. Lots of delicious food and inspiring speakers such as yourself, and we're really looking forward to it. And, Mark and I believe that if we can do it in Cincinnati and build veganism here and the things that we're doing here, that we can really do it anywhere. Sometimes when we visit other places, we feel like, gosh, why do we live in Cincinnati? But we know that if we can make it happen here, we can make it happen anywhere. So we're really dedicated to being here and to really spreading the message in this city and being a model for, like, just the example of the school. That school can be a model, and other people can do it in other cities, and we've got the infrastructure for it. And so anyone can say, hey, I'd like to do this school, and we can say, well, we can assist you.
Exactly. Right. You're kind of paving a nice trail that other people can learn from.
Yes. So we just keep moving everything right along. Sometimes things take longer than we like, but we are persistent.
Right. Great. Well, I don't see nobody at this point has raised their hand. So sometimes it happens a little bit later. Sometimes there's a delay. But it's been really wonderful to talk to you, Anna, again, and to hear about these wonderful developments that have been happening, and the new book and the school. And, we've just seen over the years so many great things. And I'm just curious, your son Noah is now about how old?
He just turned 4 in July, yeah.
4 years old, goodness. Yeah, a little bit like vegan from birth or before birth.
Yes.
Right. Great. Yeah, we saw him the other day, and he looked wonderful. So that's great. It's wonderful that it was wonderful to see you and Sean. But we wish you all the best in everything. And like I say, it's there's so many things that can spin off from this. Teaching children yoga, teaching adults yoga, teaching vegan cooking. I think something where, like, some kind of a mini sanctuary where there's animals, like you were saying, having some land, maybe also teaching how to garden, how to grow. We can grow food ourselves. What a thought! We can grow our own food, and teaching about that, and really helping people to question the typical cultural narrative that we have to buy processed foods from huge corporations, and that we have to get our health from pharmaceutical companies. All of this stuff is so totally ridiculous and toxic. And it's beautiful to just create an alternative. That's what you're doing. It's an inspiring example. So thanks again for joining us. And we do have someone here who has a question. So I'll go ahead and on you. This is our friend Catherine Perry. She lives, I think, in the area in Indiana. Are you there?
Yes. Hello, Will. Hello, Anna.
Hi.
I'm
Hi.
So glad to be here with you, and I'll just, since you mentioned nobody had joined the queue for comments or questions, I thought I would quickly say a little word of thanks to Anna for the gorgeous book. It's just wonderful. I haven't yet read the whole book, but I love what I've perused so far. Just wanted to congratulate you.
Oh, good.
Well, thank you
yeah.
so much.
And I don't know over the past months if anybody has mentioned, because I wasn't on every call, but I'm not sure if anybody mentioned our Veg Fest. We are in the Midwest, too, and we, with a group, we created a Veg Fest, the inaugural Michiana. That's for Michigan, Indiana, because we're right at the border of Michigan and Indiana. So we created our Michiana Veg Fest, which took place on the 24th of March. And we had nearly 3,000 people come.
Really? I didn't even hear about it. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So that was our inaugural, and we're going to have one every year.
Wow.
And the most recent news is that, well, we're still working on the date and the venue. The first one was held at the University of Notre Dame, which provided a wonderful venue, which turned out to be too small in the end because they could only let 1,000 people in at one time.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Was it a one-day or two-day? Was it a one-day or two-day?
It was one day, just one day, one Sunday.
Great. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, the 25th of March. Yes.
Fantastic.
For 5 hours. And, you know, the team worked extremely hard to make it happen, and there was a lot of advertising and all that. So it was really wonderful, how the turnout. We never expected that many.
Were you part of the team to help make it happen, or?
Yes, we're a team.
Uh-huh.
And now what we've done is we've created a nonprofit. So we also changed the website from .com to .org, so it's MichianaVegFest.org. And there are pictures of our event there and what we did. We had speakers and chef demos and a kids' corner and books and magazines, just everything. It was lots of vendors, food. It was really amazing.
Yeah, people are really, begging, asking for these types of events. And I think that at VegFest, a lot of people do come for the food that, or to check it out, that are not vegan or even vegetarian.
Right.
So I think it's just really wonderful to, for some, introduce them to a vegan lifestyle at these events where they're eating delicious food.
Exactly. And a lot of people were curious. We did surveys afterwards, and we had a good response rate, about 60% rate, which was really good. And people said, we asked them, are you vegan? Are you veg curious or, vegetarian, whatever? And so there were quite a few people who said veg curious.
Right.
And of course, we emphasized health also, so it's just people are hungering, I think, for this kind of information. And to learn how to do really delicious food that is, ethical, sustainable, environmentally friendly. So it's all, it's like three pluses. It's like a triple win. That's what I say.
Right. Well, great. Thanks so much, Catherine, for sharing that about. I didn't know about Veg Michiana, but I'm delighted to hear you have 3,000 people, and it's great to hear also that you're going to be putting one on in May. So we have one in March and one in May in the Midwest in Cincinnati, and we'll be there.
Yeah, we're not yet sure if it's going to be March. We're still negotiating, but it will be in the spring. Yeah.
Right. Fantastic.
And yeah, congratulations for doing that. It will be fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Catherine. Yeah.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you for all you do.
All right. You're welcome. Yeah, thanks.
Bye.
Right, thank, yeah, bye-bye. And, yeah, thanks so much, Anna, for joining us. I really appreciate it. I'm sure you've got your hands full with your, with Noah and 10,000 other things. So thanks for taking time out of your schedule to let us know about the progress of your new book and where we can get it. And, in fact, what's that website again? You mentioned it briefly, but I wanted to write it down.
WorldPeaceYogaBook.com, and I can also send you the link.
Yeah, WorldPeaceYogaBook, right, .com.
Yeah, it's always my pleasure and always inspiration to be on the call and to listen to you speak. So I just really just appreciate, for again, that boost of energy and more inspiration to keep doing the work.
Great. All right. Take care. All our best to you and Sean and everyone. Thanks. Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye. Thanks. All right. So thank you, Anna and Catherine. Thanks. Yeah, especially, of course, Anna, for coming on and sharing with us about her book and the Montessori School, the Vegan Montessori School in Cincinnati. That's really interesting. So we have a little bit of time. There were a few questions that people asked me during the month that I thought I could maybe quickly respond to. And also, if anyone has anything specifically that you'd like me to address in the time that we have left, then please press *6 and we can bring it up. Absolutely. So first of all, I just mentioned briefly that you all have your resources that I sent out, that I put together every month for the World Peace Diet Circle for July 2018. And I really like this quote. There's a fellow sent me many quotes from a famous South Indian saint. His name is Tiruvalluvar. And he, it's not really known exactly when he lived, but there's many monuments and temples, and he wrote one famous book in couplets, and many of the couplets are very strongly pro-vegetarian, like this one: when a man realizes that meat is the butchered flesh of another creature, he will abstain from eating it. That's dated to probably around 300 BCE, and it just shows that our movement does have ancient roots, and I think it probably goes way back before that as well. It's as you probably have all heard me talk about this, so I won't say anything more, but I think it's an ancient movement, and that we've strayed painfully far from the perhaps wiser time that we had as human beings on this earth. So, but please, just check out the things on the resources. So we have the quite a few, actually, of videos and I guess mainly videos that we did over the last month. One, the interview with Matt Belair is up on our website, by Going Vegan Can Create World Peace and Shift Humanity. I'm really impressed with Matt Belair. He's from Canada, and he's a really super athlete and very just a bright, shining young guy. And so we had a great time on that interview, and you can kind of get a feeling for him going to his YouTube channel. He's interviewed a lot of different people. He's very hardworking and conscientious, and really, I think he's a vegan now too. So it's been great to be able to create that video with him, and then my talk at the Animal Rights Conference, which I was at on June 30th, about 2 weeks ago, is up. Somebody took that. Actually, it was taken by Renee of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. And then there's also the lecture that we gave in Las Vegas, and a new cooking video by Madeline on how to sprout nuts naturally. It's so great. You know, you can pay like twice as much for sprouted nuts and seeds. Like you can buy sprouted sunflower seeds or sprouted pumpkin seeds or sprouted walnuts or others, Brazil nuts. And what you do basically, what they do, I mean, to sprout them is just soak them for a certain period of time. Usually it's not that long, maybe 8 hours or so. So they just start transforming to create sprouts. They don't actually start actually sprouting. And then you just kind of stop the process by then drying them. And you have to, so you need a dehydrator. And we don't want to pay for a dehydrator that runs on electricity. Here in California, of course, we don't need to, but I think a lot of people live in a place where you could, at certain times of the year, you could hang your things outside. So we show how to do that, and we've been eating these sprouted, dehydrated nuts. And when we were in Hippocrates, giving lectures there in last February, we went to an extensive presentation on the multiple benefits of sprouted nuts and seeds when you sprout them. It just unlocks, in many ways, the beneficial nutrients in them. And you get a lot more bioavailability of nutrients, especially of the proteins, essential fatty acids, vitamins and minerals. If you just eat a nut the way it is, it's sort of naturally kind of protecting itself. And it's kind of hard to break down. It's kind of heavy in your stomach, usually if you have a few of them. And they're good, but when you sprout them, it's like a whole different thing. It's like a whole, and they're more delicious. They're really light and kind of crunchy and easy to digest and just really like a whole different little thing. So, well, we thought it would be great. It's so easy to do. It's so cheap. You just buy some nuts and sprout them yourself, and walnuts especially are easy. Walnuts are the easiest. We found that Brazil nuts, macadamia nuts, hazelnuts are also possible, but they're not as easy because they're denser and it just takes longer. So anyway, we have a thing there, and there's a lot of other things. As usual, there's lots of news in the movement. It's great to see our friend Ted Barnett. He's an MD in Rochester, New York. He's created his group. He's got a great group. A video on, I think it's, he pronounces it, Wufpabin, a new medical breakthrough, which is a whole food, plant-based nutrition. But he says that it's funny. You have to watch it. If you're really tired of spending so much money on pharmaceuticals for all these conditions, we have a new drug called Wufpabin, which is WFPBN, which is a whole food, plant-based nutrition, and that will be much more effective than any other pharmaceutical. So, it's great to see so much progress being made on so many fronts, really, on so many different levels. And some of you have seen the Piglet prank. I just think it's great to see. Yeah, it's an Indian state. We'll see how it goes. Uttarakhand, which is up next to Nepal in northern India, this entire state has granted legal rights to animals as persons. I mean, this is really huge. But again, it shows that what was once unthinkable is at least thinkable and actually doable. Whether or not it will be upheld in court, we don't know. But it's at least as a statement, it's really so positive and so optimistic, I think. There's a lot of new films coming out. They were screening the premiere of Dominion at the Animal Rights Conference, and I did not watch it. I had to fly back, but I've seen the trailer, and it looks pretty intense and good. I know it's intense. Not as intense as Earthlings, but Sean Munson, the founder of Earthlings, is also heavily involved in this. It's created by an Australian filmmaker. It's getting a lot of publicity, so I think it will be seen by a lot of people. And the basic theme is to show that there's this invisible empire based on violence and abuse of billions of animals. And I think when people realize that this invisible empire is not only destroying these poor animals, but also is devastating on every level to them and to the earth, it's quite visceral. So, again, I think it's great to see all these different films coming out now. There's also lots of articles that have been written in the mainstream media in the last month, surveys like the survey of U.S. attitudes towards farming, animal farming and veganism. This article that 52, I mean, it's amazing, 52 dairy farms in New York, which is one of the largest dairy producing states, have lost their wholesale contracts because of the collapsing demand for milk and cheese. The government now has some outrageous, it's absolutely outrageous, what is it? I have another article here that, that talks about it, but here it is. Think of this. A 1.39 billion, with a B, billion pound surplus of cheese. And they did a picture of this. I mean, this block of cheese is like larger than the entire Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Over a billion pounds of cheese. Our taxpayer dollars are just buying the surplus of the dairy industry because nobody wants this milk. And what are we going to do with it? You know, it's just part of the insanity of animal agriculture. Great article or interview with Prince Khalid of Saudi Arabia, why I went vegan. He's got a lot of money, and he's funding a lot of really helpful vegan initiatives. And also a great film by Moby, Why I'm a Vegan. And the Interfaith Vegan Coalition is another movement. I think it's really doing a lot of great work. And we're part of that, actually. There's a very good article here, Activism Without Inner Work is Impotent. I think that basic idea is really helpful, that if we're going to be effective activists, we need to do the inner work. Otherwise, our activism doesn't have much power or impact because we haven't really questioned deeply who we are and what we're about, and we tend to be adversarial in our approach to things. So it's really important, I think, to understand this. I mean, it's something we talk about a lot. And I won't go on too much more here, but basically quite a few, again, articles showing the tremendous gains that are happening in public awareness about the benefits of a plant-based way of eating and living for ethical reasons, and also the resistance of the meat, dairy, and egg industries. And it's just getting better. You know, it is getting better. There's a lot of, like this new documentary, Blood Water, about British Columbia's, it's called their Dirty Salmon Farming Secret, how they have these salmon farms and slaughterhouses for these fish, and how they just dump all the blood and other toxic pollutants straight right into the pristine bays around Victoria. It's causing terrible diseases to spread among the wild populations of salmon. And we just can't go on. I mean, it's absolutely just crazy what's happening. So, again, I wrote the rope beside, you know, as a way to try to highlight some of these things, and it's more relevant today than ever. And then the graphic image showing that so much of the grain that we're currently feeding to cows could be fed to people. And why aren't we not doing that? So, So I wanted to talk a little bit. It's now a little bit after 6 o'clock Pacific time here in California. And I've noticed that there are people joining us here. So these are people probably who thought that it's starting at 6 when actually it's finishing up. I mean, we switched the time this month to 5 o'clock, and we're thinking of doing this permanently. I was mentioning that in the emails that we sent out and also on the World Peace Act Facilitator Facebook page, but I think there are some people who automatically, naturally, on the third Thursday call in. So welcome to all of you, and I'm sorry you weren't aware. We've already had about a 40-minute or so, 35-40-minute conversation with Anna Ferguson, the author of the new book, World Peace Yoga, and who is the force behind the vegan Montessori school in Cincinnati. It was really interesting. If you want to listen to the archives that talk, you can do that. Everything is recorded. And you know the link. I think it's on our website and all the emails I send out. If you're not sure, just send me an email. But anyway, so we're kind of in the second part of our call here this month, and so as I was saying, there's two things I wanted to go over briefly. One person asked me, and quite a few people have asked me this over the years too. You know, she's been working on putting on a World Peace Diet study group in her area, and now it's getting toward the end of the 7-week series. And what next? And what would be a good thing to do next? Just that's it, we're done, or do we keep doing something? And if we do, what do we do, and how do we continue? So I think that's a great question, and there's a few different ways to answer it. One example we are aware of is the one of Anna Ferguson, who was just on our call, and she and Mark Stroud in Cincinnati basically for many years have been putting on a World Peace Diet study group once or twice a year, and just doing it over and over again, you know, and filling it up. You know, it's something that people say, oh, you know, they say we're going to do another one. They do one in the spring. They usually do it spring and fall, one in the spring and one in the fall. But you can do it however you want. And people who go to the one in the spring say, yeah, I'm going to tell my friends so they'll come to the one in the fall. And so you can just do it as an ongoing 7-week or however many weeks you want, 10-week kind of a opportunity for people. Because I think when people engage in the World Peace Diet discussions in the way that we recommend doing it, which is that you're not setting yourself up to be the one and only expert in this whole thing, but more you're a facilitator and the group has its own wisdom, and people learn from each other, and you know the group, you know, you can discuss the ideas of the World Peace Diet on a chapter by chapter basis, and people can perhaps bring some vegan food to share, and just that format can really help people to transition away from eating animal foods towards eating and living in a vegan way, but also people who are already vegan can understand it much more deeply and can become more motivated to be vegan activists or advocates. And I think, so that's one, you know, that's one option, is to just keep it up, doing it as a local yoga studio or to your local school or to local church or a local community center or library or in someone's home, and whatever you think works well for you and makes sense. Some people have done it as an ongoing or like in this case, I think with Mark, he did it sometimes as a class where people would pay, you know, so you can do it as a class where people pay, or you can do it as just a free thing, but doing it as a class where people pay, so they're coming to learn, so you're conducting part of it as a discussion group, and then part of it as a class where you kind of teach about the ideas, and also you can, if you are up to it, I mean, if you can, it's not that hard, but if you have facilities, you can maybe teach some cooking skills as well, or food preparation skills, and so if there's a kitchen there, you can show people how to make certain things. That usually, you know, if you want to charge, you can charge more because you're really teaching people like a cooking class together with a World Peace Diet study group. So there's lots of different ways of doing it, and these are some of the ways people have tried. Another way is, is exemplified by our friend and colleague Patricia Todd in Los Angeles area. She did about an 8-week World Peace Diet study group about, 5 years ago. And it was on a Wednesday evening for eight Wednesdays. And they've been meeting every Wednesday since for 5 years. They just never stopped. And she changed it. She calls it Veg Health 101. And it's been going every Wednesday for 5 years. And it's really a very active group, and they read different books, and they put on some events. They of course coordinated some lectures for us when we were in Los Angeles recently. It was really fun to meet a lot of the people from her Veg Help 101 Wednesday night study group. So it sort of just segued into an ongoing gathering where people bring food. It's like a potluck, and people eat together, and they become really good friends and learn, and they do some outreach into the community, various things. So there's lots of options, and I think, you know, one option also is to support each other in growing food. You know, like there's lots of aspects to veganism. And one of the things that Madeline and I are exploring a lot the last few years is just how to be effective, not just in advocacy, but also in our own lives as vegans. And growing your own food is a learning curve of its own, but it's very rewarding, I think, to grow food on whatever land you have, even if you don't have land, some space. We have some friends down in Morro Bay who have these amazing, like, hydroponic devices you can put just on the inside your house, even, or just on the porch or deck, and grow really. I mean, they're growing huge quantities of tomatoes and zucchinis and greens, and giving them or selling them or whatever to people. So that's even without any land at all. We have we don't have a lot of land here. We have about a half an acre, but it's amazing how much food we can grow. We did a calculation recently, an accounting of all of the things we've planted, and I was really amazed we planted so much. We actually have planted now 50 fruit trees, 50 fruit and nut trees here on the land. We've planted quite a few different apple trees, just a lot, you know, peach and apricot and pear and plum and cherry and, gosh, all kinds of things, persimmons and figs and lots of others, olives, and I'm drawing a blank, but anyway, lots mulberries and Chinese, Asian, you know, pears, various things, and walnuts and almonds. It's just so neat to see all these different trees, and now it's been a few years. The years kind of go by, and they're really starting to give a lot of fruit. So do you have that sheet, Madeline, somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just look at it. I want to tell them because it would be nice to have it.
Right.
And anyway, so those are we planted those, and then we've planted a bunch of berries and things. So yeah, 50 trees in our little yard, and then avocado. I'm just looking through here. Yeah, and nectarines and grapefruits. Yeah, all the citrus, right? Grapefruits, guavas, and jujubes, and kiwis, kumquats, lemons, mandarins, mirabelles. Yeah, so it's really, you know, pomegranates, and then about, I think it's roughly about 80 herb bushes, perennial herb bushes, buckwheat, celery, comfrey, curry, lavender, lemon balm, marjoram, any kinds of mints, pineapple sage, rosemary, other kinds of sage, stevia. Stevia is really great. Thyme, verbena, yarrow, yerba buena. So, you know, all these different herbs, and then there's also the possibility of planting berries in grapes, you know, blackberries, blueberries, currants, goji berries, grapes, raspberries, strawberries. We've got probably about 70 of those plants. So, and then a lot of ornamentals that are just fun to have that are perennial bushes and shrubs. So we've got over 300 things we've planted now, and a watering system for them. And it's a nice thing, you know, spend a couple hours in the afternoon or whatever, but we, you know, and that doesn't even include all the vegetables, which are annuals, typically, all the tomatoes and cucumbers and kale and you know, peppers and eggplants and pumpkins and squashes. You'll get lots of all that stuff. So it's really interesting to kind of delve into that kind of relationship with the earth, with keeping all the compost and remineralizing soil, re-enriching the soil. We just finished a big project, which was to capture all of our gray water. I had to actually go under the house. I mean, we did it together. And we have five different black, pipes, 2-inch pipes that go from the shower, the bathtub, the kitchen sink, the bathroom sink, the two different bathroom sinks, all those, we diverted them. We put valves in and diverted them. So they go into the garden. We put them into a tank. And then we bought a pump. And so now every 2 days we can just water our garden. I mean, it works. It's so great. You know, we can water our garden with all this water that would be just going into the sewer. And so there's great things you can do. We also, I don't know if I should mention it. Should I mention about the amber? We call it amber. But I'll just tell you, there's a book we bought. It's called Liquid Gold, and it's just really about the basic idea that human urine is really rich in nitrogen, and it's an absolute shame to just pee it away. You can use human urine to really grow amazing fruits and vegetables. So we've been experimenting with that also, and lo and behold, it's absolutely true. We recycle our urine ourselves on our garden. things are just thriving. I mean, all that nitrogen, because that's the thing. Most people don't realize it. We have this whole idea of just flushing away our waste. Just flush it away, get rid of it. Our human excrement, and the urine and the feces together are not very. It's kind of hard to. There's composting toilets and all that, but it's well understood now that it's much better to separate the urine from the feces, and that's what they're doing. Like in Sweden, is pioneering this. In Sweden, they have these toilets, very common in Sweden, that separate the urine and feces, and the urine typically goes into a tank, and then it's collected by farmers, and they put it on the fields, and it's just really fantastic fertilizer. They understand that, and they're doing it. And, it's not something that's that well known here, but, it's really tragic, I think, that we're wasting so much. The feces part is also good, but it doesn't have much nitrogen. I mean, there's three main nutrients, of course, that are needed, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, especially nitrogen, because plants make protein. You understand all this, right? Plants make protein. That's the foundation of the proteins that we're eating, and protein is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, which really just come from the atmosphere and from water. But to really make them, for them to really grow, especially the leaves and the stalks, they need nitrogen. So that's why we need to keep replenishing nitrogen into the soil. And when we use commercial fertilizers, that's not a very good way to build soil. So when we recycle nitrogen-rich urine, it's just really rich, enriching the soil. The feces part of human waste has a lot more of the potassium and phosphorus. So, that's also good to recycle. We're not doing that yet. But basically, I think whatever we can do, I think it's good to do it. And I remember, I think I wrote about it on the Ropi side in the monastery in Korea, for hundreds of years, all of the human manure was just mixed with grass and spread put on the fields. They've been doing that for centuries. And when we're vegans, it's in eating an organic diet. I mean, it's very healthy. So that's one of the things, of course, that's one of the prerequisites, I think, really, that make sure that we're eating a healthy diet, because what comes through us, our urine and or feces, is going to be healthy if we're healthy, if our diet's healthy. And it's wonderful. I mean, it's this recycling thing. So I think the more we can connect our lives with the cycles of nature and use them to enrich. And the other thing that's really good, too, actually, about this whole thing is that there's information. There's information in urine, for example. I mean, it's our unique urine. It's a byproduct. I mean, urine, first of all, some people are grossed out by urine. I'm not really talking about this so much, but just really, it's like in India, like when we've been at yoga centers where a lot of the yogis, drink their own urine every morning. And I did it myself for quite a few months just to see. And it's nothing bad. I mean, it's actually, many people heal cancer and heal many other things by drinking their own urine. So So this is something, of course, that in the West, since we're sort of very repulsed by anything natural, we get very, and it's true that human excrement, urine, and feces from people eating the standard American diet is toxic, horrible stuff. You know, it's really disgusting. So I wouldn't stay far away from it. But if you're eating a healthy, vegan, organic diet, urine is just a byproduct of the blood, and it's nothing. It's very clean. It's a antiseptic, actually. It's an antiseptic. It's great to put it on wounds. It'll kill bacteria. It's an antifungal. You know, people use it for athlete's foot and other things. It's an antiseptic, antifungal, bacterial. It's actually great stuff. So, I think, the whole idea, really for me with veganism is like question the official stories in the society, especially the stories that are causing devastation and disconnecting us from nature and from the natural beauty and abundance of our life and the beauty of the beings that we are, and realize that as we purify our bodies and our minds, we can purify our gardens and our way of eating and our way of living. We can become more self-sufficient and more empowered. It's very empowering, I think, to have food and water and energy coming from our own land as much as possible. You know, we're working with capturing rainwater, for example, and storing it and growing our own food and so forth. And I think all of us can do something in that way. I mean, we can all recycle our compost, for example. We can just throwing food waste away is throwing away nutrients that could be used in building up soil. To build up soil is wonderful. And what we've done here has created a whole ecosystem where there's a lot more birds and insects than anywhere else around here. And now there's a lot more shade, which is really nice because it's pretty hot here in the summer, so it's cooler. We've got water. We've got two different waterfalls. And so it's just, it's just a way of creating beauty and creating a space and creating a connection with the land. And I think, you know, when we plant our own trees and we water them ourselves and we use our own urine, like I was saying, there's a biology there, a connection. There's a lot of people, like the ancient wisdom was that plants are connected to us. And if we grow plant-based foods with awareness, they're not just giving us food, they're giving us healing food. They're giving us medicinal food. It's designed especially for us. Really, you know, it's growing in our space. And there are people who say they wouldn't even want to buy any food that was grown by somebody else because it was grown for that other person. You know, the plants tune into us. When we go out into the garden and we look at the plants with loving eyes and we caress them to notice them, like Madeline does this every single day. She goes out in the garden and she looks with loving eyes and caring eyes and gives them a little water. And we go very often after supper and walk through the garden and we kind of look at, oh, look at this. We get some more grapes coming and here's some beautiful cucumbers and look at our beautiful walnut tree. And, you know, but the plants, a lot of people say, plants don't have any awareness or whatever. But I think perhaps there is a connection we can have with plants to a degree that we're healing. Not only ourselves, but also the world, because I think that's really the underlying purpose of humans is to live in a creative and harmonious way with the plants and animals of this earth. And we can do that. You know, veganism is the foundation of that, as a philosophy of maximizing our awareness. And I think growing food is great. So anyway, that's a long way of saying that. I think there's lots of things we can do in continuing and extending a World Peace Diet study group. You know, there could be a permaculture class or any kind of agriculture or cooking classes that go along with it. Maybe it's a separate endeavors. The whole idea is to basically use whatever you're interested in and share and make whatever you feel is a helpful contribution to our world. I think there's so many different ways that we can do that. So that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. And the other thing, maybe I will just, well, maybe I'll wrap it up here. It's kind of nice. I mean, please do let me know if you have any strong feelings about this new time, either pro or con. You know, because we need to make a decision if we're going to do this next month in August, if we're going to meet. When we meet, we'll be meeting here on August 16th. And let's see, gosh, we're going to be in Seattle. So I'm not sure how that's going to work. I think it'll work. We're going to be just kicking off a World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program. We're doing a World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program in Seattle on Orcas Island at a place called Camp Indralaya, which is a Theosophical Society's summer camp. And some of the people there heard me speak at the Theosophical headquarters in Chicago last summer and invited Madeline and me to go there to put on a training. And they went vegan. So I think three of them are now vegan. The main people at this Camp Indralaya are vegans, which is really fantastic because most of the Theosophists are not. They are vegetarian, a lot of them. But anyway, so if you know anyone who would like to actually take a World Peace Diet Facilitator training in person with us, it will be in the Seattle area on Orcas Island, August 16th, 17th, 18th, and the morning of the 19th, which is Sunday. So that Thursday evening we'll have our call. So what I was saying is if we can get any clear communication from you folks, if 6 p.m. Pacific or 5 p.m. Pacific is preferable, we'll go ahead maybe and go with 5 p.m. From 5 to 6:30, I'm thinking. But I'm happy to change it back if people really don't like it, because I'm really not sure what would be the best for everyone. We all have our preferences on these things. So I wanted to mention that, and also that we are doing a whole electric tour for the Pacific Northwest, in Victoria and Vancouver, Portland, and Seattle and some Northern California, Roseburg, I think also in August, and then September, October to Europe and Eastern Europe. And so if you know folks, spread the word. We're planning on going down to Sedona in January, and probably to Florida in February, definitely actually Florida in February and in March. So that's our upcoming schedule. We're not sure about China and Vietnam, some other Asian things perhaps also coming up. But it's a little more difficult lately for some reason. I'm not sure if there's governmental, I think it's basically governmental, I don't know what, just resistance on some level. So we'll see how that all goes. But it was great while it lasted. Hopefully it'll continue on. So I think we're pretty much at our time. There were other things I wanted to talk about, but I think instead of doing that, I'll just say I have been working lately on a book, which will be coming out hopefully in the next few months. The working title is Buddhism and Veganism, Animal Liberation and Spiritual Awakening. It's a book that will have about 19 or 20 essays by people who are Buddhists and who are vegans about the interconnection between Buddhism and veganism and how essential they are to each other. We've talked a little bit with Anna about veganism and yoga, and I think there's sort of a similar dynamic with veganism and Buddhism. So we have people from the Vipassana tradition, from the Zen tradition, from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and we'll be, I'm working on that. So I just, wrote an essay, and part of the essay I talked about something that I've coined a term for it, which is the Enlightenment fallacy. And the Enlightenment fallacy is this fallacy that I am now so evolved spiritually that it's fine for me to eat meat and dairy products. And so there's a variety of narratives that fall under this rubric. Either because I see the relativity of phenomena, or I've reached the karma-less state, I'm no longer subject to karma, or since I have so much love inside me, I love the animals, I'm blessing them, or I'm eating them. There's quite a few different sort of branches to this Enlightenment fallacy, but it's a huge fallacy, and I've written an article, I think, that does a pretty good job of exposing this. And so that will be in the book, and I think I'll also post it up online too. And so I'll talk about that maybe next time a little bit, because I think we run into this quite a bit, and we need to understand how this is the opposite of any kind of spirituality. When people talk about abusing other beings for food, and that there's some kind of spiritual way that where they can rationalize this, that there's no foundation for that. And it's the opposite of that. So I love getting into that and really helping free people from that delusion. So I'll just say that for now, and I guess we'll close here. I do want to say that it's really great that we have quite a few yoga teachers in the World Peace Type Facilitator Training. Anna Ferguson, of course, is a prime example. Angel Meenakshi Honig in Hawaii is another example. She's also a World Peace Type Facilitator and teacher and trainer and bringing the vegan message to the yoga community in a big way. And I think the more we have people who are in these traditions that are also vegan and making these connections, the better it is for everybody. All right, so I think that's it. It's been wonderful to be able to get together. And thank you so much again, Anna Ferguson, for joining us. Let me know what you think about this new time. And in the meantime, have a fantastic month, everyone. Madeline and I send you our love and appreciation for all you're doing to help make a better world for all of us. And, of course, we always welcome any feedback you may have. I will go ahead and close out here with a short piece of music. Let's see, I think, it looks like a good one. Maybe this one is quite short, but I like it. It's the it's called Inner Sanctum. Joy at the inner sanctum of peace and freedom abide in all of us for the remainder of our years together here on this earth. Much love to you all. Thanks again.